VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Wine Times, brought to you in association with the Sunday Times Wine Club. I'm Will Lyons, the Vice President of the club, and I'm joined as always by Annika Rice for another dip into a glorious wine region. And discussing and decanting with us today is a Paralympian, crossbench peer in the House of Lords, motivational speaker and broadcaster, Tanny Gray-Thompson.
Hello, Tanny. We're so thrilled that you're here in our funny little area today, aren't we? We're in a diner right in the middle of London.
And underneath the railway bridge.
Yeah, there's trains, there's a plane.
Cars, you name it. It's all going on around
The air conditioning unit keeps sort of thundering on and off. But anyway, thank you for coming along. We, of course, all know you as a hugely successful Paralympian. 16 Paralympic medals, 11 golds, held over 30 world records, won the London Marathon six times between 1997 and 2002. Extraordinary achievements. And, of course, in 2005, you became Dame Tanny Gray-Thompson. And since retiring from your athletic career, you've served as an independent crossbench peer in the House of Lords, basically a para-athlete turned parliamentarian. Are you enjoying your new role?
Do you know, sports and politics are remarkably similar.
Are they?
Actually,
are they? Yeah. What?
You've just got to be quite sort of focused and just get on with it and not rely on too many other people. But I'm very lucky to have had two careers that I really love.
Yeah. We think of you now as a campaigner. And I know you from the Woman of the Year lunch, of course, which you've now taken over. But as a campaigner, I guess your whole thing is about making sport accessible and safe. So you must, on one hand, be pleased that in 2024, the visibility of women in sport is an all-time high, and yet very depressing when you arrive at Heathrow, you can't get off the plane.
Yes.
Which happens quite a lot, because I follow Tanny on Twitter, and she's always going, I'm stuck.
I can't get off a train, I can't get off a plane. I mean, things have moved on in lots of ways, but there's still huge challenges. So I was very lucky through, you know, my family, through sport, I had lots of opportunities. And I just think that should be more universal. So that, you know, had a big impact on my campaigning and the work I do now. And, you know, I get treated way better than any other disabled person I know. And I just find that not very fair, actually.
Because recently, didn't you have to crawl off a train?
Oh, yes, yeah. I had to throw all my stuff off and crawl off the train. And not so long ago, I nearly got taken to a sidings at about midnight. And then recently, just got left on a plane for 40 minutes while they were trying to find my chair. And that's where you think in 2024, you think some of those things would have been sorted by now. But the reality is they're not. So trains were meant to be step-free completely step-free by January the 1st, 2020. It's now going to be 2070 before trains are accessible.
2070?
Yeah. So it's all just been kicked, you know, the can's been kicked down
that
the road.
That is very depressing.
What about the London Underground?
So it's about a third of tube stations that are accessible. And, you know, Transport for London, they try hard.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a network that wasn't built for women, let alone anyone who's disabled. You know, some of the tube stations, however much money you have, could not be accessible.
Yes.
But it's also, you know, expensive to make Green Park accessible. I think it was about 120 million. So, you know, it's a lot of money.
I guess your dad prepared you for this life, though. He was an architect, but he refused to make your house wheelchair accessible. So he just said, get on with it.
He did. So I was paralysed when I was quite young, and I was born with spina bifida. So I think they always knew it was coming, that I would end up being paralysed, just not quite sure when. Yeah, and he refused to make a house accessible, partly because he thought ramps were really ugly, which they are.
Sorry, darling. It just, aesthetically, it's not going to work.
Well, it's not aesthetically pleasing, is what he used to say to me.
Yeah.
But also, he sort of joked about it, that he didn't want to make it the only place I could live. And then much later on, he said I was quite an annoying child and they just didn't want me living at home forever. But actually, that was really helpful for me at the time. I think a lot of people thought he was mean and horrible, but
he needed the right thing. You needed that training because, I mean, the story of when you're at Loughborough University and you try to get to the gym and you're literally crawling upstairs and dragging yourself across grassy slopes. I mean, I was practically sobbing when I read about that. I mean, can you imagine? And what were the other students doing? Kind of helping, watching?
Do you know, a lot of the students were very helpful. I think, you know, at the time, they didn't have another disabled athlete that was at Loughborough. So, you know, I don't think a lot of people realised how inaccessible some of these buildings were.
Yeah.
So people were generally really helpful. And to be honest, a lot of it, I quite enjoyed the fight. I quite enjoyed the challenge.
That's what I mean. I can just imagine you crawling across that grassy bank, you know.
Well, I wanted to go train it. So for me, you're always having to weigh up things. Is the sort of price you pay worth it? So it was to be able to be at Loughborough and to train and to do the things I needed to do. And actually, Loughborough really toughened me up as an athlete, you know, because they have so many talented people there. You know, if you survive it, then, you know, you come out really strong. So it was always worth that fight.
You're amazing. Your granddad had a saying, aim high even if you hit a cabbage.
Yeah, we have no idea where that comes from. Literally, no one I've ever spoken to has ever heard of it. But it was
you should have it on your sweatshirt.
It's just about having a goal, just about not letting things stand in your way and just about, I think, having a dream. So, you know, I grew up wanting to be an athlete or wanting to be involved in sport. And between that and my parents, who were really supportive of us, I've got an older sister, then, you know, they provided that parachute and a really strong encouragement, you know, to be what we wanted to be.
You sound amazing. Tani, we're thrilled that you're going to come drinking with us today. We've given you the whole of New Zealand, basically, for our wine tasting, because you took part in the Commonwealth Games there very early in your career. And we thought it'd be nice to toast that moment in your life with some very lovely wines. And have you been back? What, you know, did you like New Zealand? Do you even remember it?
I love New Zealand. When you're competing, you don't sort of get to see much of where you are, which I think was a bit of a shame. You kind of fly in, you compete and you leave again. But I have been back since and I just loved it as a country.
And it's one of the most beautiful wine producing countries in the world, along with South Africa, because it's just stunning. I don't know if you went down to the South Island, but around Queenstown, sort of central Otago down there, it's just breathtaking.
I spent most of my time around Auckland.
Yeah.
But I've got loads of New Zealand friends as well, who always rave about the wine, who will say, you know, it's the best wine in the world. And I quite like that loyalty as well. And also to learn, my father used to buy quite a lot of wine.
When was he buying wine, though? What sort of decade would that have been?
It would have been 70s, 80s, 90s. He died in 2010. When he passed away, we found out that, for myself and my sister, he'd bought just lots of wine that we liked. So various either, you know, names that we'd mentioned or if we'd been for a family dinner, we said we liked it, we had it. So I've probably got more wine than I can ever drink in the rest of my life.
Oh, fantastic. Did he build a wine cellar?
No, it's all in storage.
It's all, yeah.
Oh, so
it's obviously a quite a high level.
Yeah, so we just sort of gradually take it out as we think we can drink it. Yeah.
The reason I was asking about what decade your father was really buying wine in earnest is because he would have lived through the great New Zealand wine boom. Because even though that sort of vineyards were first planted there in the 1850s and 60s, it didn't really get going until the late 70s. And the main driver was the wine we're having in our glass number one, which is New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, which I think makes up something like 75% of all New Zealand wine. So we're down in the tip of the South Island, at the very far north of the South Island, near to a place called Blenheim. In the early 70s, Blenheim was known for sheep farming and sort of cherry orchards and fruit, and there wasn't a lot going on there. And then they started planting vines, and they planted this grape called Sauvignon Blanc, whose home, his sort of historical home, was in the Loire Valley in France, where it's quite crisp and dry. If you've ever had a Sancerre, I mean, you definitely have some in your collection, I would have thought. But in New Zealand, because it's low rainfall, lots of sunshine hours, it's perfect for growing this grape variety. I think in Blenheim, they have 2,500 hours of sunshine a year compared to here in London, where we've got 1,500. And then in Sancerre, which is near Paris, which is the sort of historical home of this great variety, they have about 1,800. And what you get is this lovely, tangy burst of sort of, it's really pungent. If you put your nose into that, Tanya, you can smell that. What do you get? Sort of green pepper and gooseberry. And
you can equally just say it smells fruit. Like white wine to me. It's fine. It's fine.
So Dad used to be quite upset with me because he said you have no palate. So I remember there was one year he'd saved this bottle of wine for years, and you know it was talked and we opened it one day, so Christmas Day, sort of with this huge flourish, he opened it and my mum took a sip and just went, oh, was that the one you got last week? And this was sort of 20 years of waiting, but my dad was devastated, and then she had to pretend she was joking. So it's when you tell me what I can smell, I think I can smell it.
Okay, yes.
But I'm not sure I could smell it on my own.
That's a very good point. It's really suggestible.
Yes, and I don't think that anyone has a bad palate. I think anyone can become a great taster. I don't believe in sort of super tasters. Some people are born with a really strong sense of smell. And 70% of a glass of wine is all about the smell and the aromatics. So if you're thinking about analysing, I mean, what does it mean to have a good palate? Mm. Well, I would analyse the aromatics, the way it feels in your mouth, and then the aftertaste as well. So what happened was, I think Cloudy Bay will... one of the first to start planting vines there, along with Brancard Estate. And also Jane and Ernie Hunter, who are great friends of the Sunday Times Wine Club. They planted in 1979. So what we're drinking now is a 2023 Sauvignon Blanc Hunter's Home Block. It's called Home Block because this is fruit from the original vineyard they planted in 1979. So they were sort of pioneers. I mean, in those days, as I said, it was sheep grazing. They had barley. And they just planted lots of different grape varieties and just saw what stuck and what worked. And this absolutely works. And I think at the Sunday Times Vintage Festival, they have a huge festival in London every May. But back in the early 80s, you had your medal winners. And it hit the headlines. And they won the medal in 86, 87, and 88 for their Sauvignon Blanc, which we have in our glass. Because no one had tasted anything quite like this.
So do the critics get a bit sniffy because it's so ubiquitous?
Yes, you're absolutely right, Annie. Because also it's quite one-dimensional. But in a good way, it's very reliable. So this is the sort of white wine that you start
reliable,
your wine
reliable.
Journey. So your late father, he probably said, oh, Sauvignon Blanc, I can't believe they're serving you that. But it's delicious. It's something you have and you enjoy it for
should
refreshment.
For
yes. Cheers.
Cheers.
You're going to sip or spit. He spits. I sit. And you, so sorry, you, really... you can do half and half.
I could do half and half.
Half and half. Have a sip and chuck it out.
I mean, this would go so well. I know we're sort of drinking this on a cold January day, but with summer salads, crunchy summer salads, anything tomato-based, garlic, gooseberry, green fruit, and tanginess.
It also tastes different when you hold it in your mouth before you spit as well, rather than just sort of glugging it around. I'm going to try some and actually drink it.
Oh, yeah, swirl it round. Tanya's having a bit of a moment of discovery here in her mouth.
She's wonderfully well with seafood swallowed. And shellfish. And
this is probably going to start. I prefer it when I'm drinking it rather than when I'm spitting it.
Yeah.
Good.
It's the most commercially successful wine probably on the planet at the moment.
So
New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc.
When
people
they sort of originally planted the grapes, would it have been quite a brave thing for them to do?
Yeah.
Just to decide to go into this area.
So I suppose it was sort of diversifying, wasn't it? But the whole story of how they found Marlborough is linked to an Australian winemaker called David Honan, who was working in Perth, Australia. And it was during the Perth show of 1983-84, I think, that he was given a bottle of Sauvignon Blanc by an amateur winemaker from New Zealand. And he couldn't believe this sort of pungent aromatics that he was getting from it. So he then went to his backers and they scoured the whole of New Zealand. It took nearly a year. And if you think in those days, they didn't have the internet or radars. We used to have an aeroplane. And they found this plot at the top of the South Island near Blenheim, where two rivers come in. And you've got this wonderful sort of gravelly soil. They said, this is where we're planting.
Well, I think it's a tick for the first one.
That's
you're happy with
nice.
That, aren't
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
Very
I,
happy
I could
with that.
Definitely drink
yeah,
that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
This is Wine Times with Annika Rice.
And Will Lyons.
We'll be back with more great wine and conversations before you even get a chance to top up your glass.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
I read Sam, in fact, I was interviewing Sam Quick on Loose Ends, who has written this amazingly inspiring book about women in sport, and you were a chapter. And I was gobsmacked, Annie, reading your chapter of how your mum, when she was wheeling you around, small baby, people would scream at her, why didn't you abort that?
Yeah.
Literally like that?
Yeah.
And you remember it?
I was five when the first person asked me directly why my mother hadn't terminated. Or she said to me, why didn't your parents abort you? It's like, I have no idea. So I remember sitting down with mum and her, yeah, her talking through it. I mean, they dealt with so much. They protected me.
Yeah.
From a lot of, but they also gave me a lot of resilience, you know, to deal with
but
that.
But also when you were pregnant, because you got a daughter, the doctor offered you a termination?
Yep. First thing I was offered was a termination. She's now 21, because the assumption was I hadn't meant to get pregnant.
Oh, and then someone stopped you and said, how did you get pregnant?
Yeah, that was funny.
Say what you shouted. Well, because that made me laugh.
I was about 8 months pregnant, and I'd really had enough by then. And I was the size of a small house. And I wasn't in the best for it. And I remember it was in middle of Cardiff, and I screamed back, I had sex with my husband, how do you think I got pregnant? And then is that, you know, that bit when I try not to lose my temper, but you're trying to think about how do I dial back from the fact I've just screamed this in the middle of Queen Street in Cardiff. And she, this woman said, oh, that's disgusting. I think I said something like, well, you've not met my husband. And then you just go, oh, just shut up. Just walk away. But then I've had loads of people who are really supportive. You know, there was one time that I remember Karis was about two and having a screaming fit in the supermarket, and I just sort of shoved her in a trolley, and I'd got her to kind of pull things off the shelf to vaguely keep her quiet. And somebody said to me, oh, you know, isn't that unfair? You've had a baby just to help you do the supermarket shopping. And it's like, seriously, you've just, you obviously don't have children.
On the other hand, it's a very good reason.
But it's very good. You know,
I can't believe people come out with this stuff. I mean,
shocking.
I mean, sometimes I don't think people always mean to be rude. They sometimes
no, it's just so strange.
But you must have. I don't know. I've had it where people stop me in the street, and if they've just seen me on TV, where obviously you have makeup artists, and their job is to make you look great, people say things like, "Oh, I didn't realise you looked like that in real life." And I don't think it's meant to be rude. It's just people say what they think.
Yeah, people always say to me, oh, you look so much smaller in real life, as it, you know. So I'm obviously very aware that I look like a tank on the television.
Well, I once gave a tasting to some surgeons, and they said, you have put on a lot of weight since your byline photograph.
I think they're justified. But the trouble is, we're joking, Will and I, but you just never do forget those barbs, do you? You just don't. However much you think, I can rise above this, you, and especially, you know, there you are on the street and you've just shouted out to someone, I had sex with my husband, how do you think I got pregnant? And then you're left there with your heart pumping and that ringing in your ears.
And trying to climb down from that is never easy.
It's not an easy one to climb down from.
Turn around and walk away.
Let's turn around and have a wine number two, Will.
We're leaving the South Island and we're going up to Hawke's Bay.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lovely part. So it's sort of based around the twin towns of Napier and Hastings.
Tell me about this one.
Well, what we have in our glass is the 2021, it's a Chardonnay. So we've probably gone from arguably the most, commercially successful grape variety, Sauvignon Blanc, to easily the most famous, well-known grape variety in the world, Chardonnay, whose natural home is in Burgundy in France. It has that sort of buttery character. Now, Hawke's Bay has that magical combination of coolness and warmth, which means you get this lovely sort of fruit texture in the wines. And I think 65% of all the apples of New Zealand are grown here.
This is I'm liking this, the aroma of this a lot better. It's not quite so acidic smelling.
This tastes more crisp to me.
There's almost like a nuttiness, a little bit of spice. And then there's that sort of dash of oak, that dash of creamy, buttery character on the finish.
I prefer this one, personally.
Yeah. It's lovely. I mean,
this is very nice.
But what's interesting?
I could drink that.
I could drink this, don't you think?
Yeah.
We need a bit of fish to go with it, perhaps. Yep. And to be lying on a beach would be nice.
And it's got that sort of racy acidity as well. It's got Trinity Hill, which is the wine estate. The winemaker is a chap called Warren Gibson. But it has on it Gimlet Gravels. Now, in the New World, where we are, sort of in the sort of Southern Hemisphere, they put all the emphasis on the grape variety. They say the grape variety is the big engine of flavour. That's why they call it New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc or New Zealand Pinot Noir. But here, in Hawke's Bay, there's this tiny area called the Gimlet Gravels, which I think the grapes were first planted in 1981 by one of those farmers who had a little aeroplane. He would drop fertilisers on fields called Chris Pask. And he was flying over. He thought, I could probably grow vines there. He took a risk. I think now there's 1,500 acres of vines grown there. And it gives the wine this distinct character. So actually, they've created a brand mark called Gimlet Gravels. And 95% of the fruit has to come from this particular area for them to put it on the label. But what they're essentially doing is they're sort of mirroring the old world attitude, which is all about the sense of place and the terroir and the appellation. Because in France and Italy and Spain, they believe the wine tastes from where it comes. Whereas in the Southern Hemisphere, places like Australia, New Zealand, California, they believe it's a grape variety that gives it this flavour. So this is New Zealand, which is very young in terms of winemaking, turning its whole philosophy on its head. And I think what the Gimlet Gravels, it has this sort of, you know, it has all that sort of really poor soil. Because if you think of a vine, you want to stress the vine. And then the roots have to go deeper and deeper and deeper to suck up the water. That's sort of imparted in the wine. But also, it has that, again, that sort of high reflectivity. So you've got all those sort of big gravel pebbles. And it's that luminosity. I think the last time I went to Gimlet Gravels, it was February. But it was so bright. It's like a 13-minute sunburn. I mean, it's almost like you're sort of blinking as you go out the plane. Because it's the sun there is almost white. And that's what the grapes love.
So does your husband drink?
No, he doesn't drink. He was an athlete. So when we were competing...
So he coached you, didn't he?
He did, yeah, for quite a long time.
How does that work in terms of the relationship budding? Can you just tell us about it, Tanny?
I mean, at one point, he was sort of squad director for the national squad. So we were very keen that if we're having a husband-wife row, we did that completely away from the squad, sort of athlete personal coach discussion. So we kind of had three very distinct relationships.
Wow,
so we were always very
bit of role
clear
play.
About, you know, what argument we were having, that we didn't let husband-wife row sort of fall into the...
Did you have to save it up for the evening?
Yeah.
But
or just you come to...
But you met when he was your coach, so yeah. Not in a relationship?
No, we met before that. I was 17 when I first met him. He was very rude to me. I was just about to go to Loughborough. He was doing his PhD at Manchester. And I think the first thing he said to me was, Loughborough's a PE college, isn't it? So we didn't speak for several years. And then just very gradually he grew on me. And yeah, we started training together. Then we kind of started going out. And then it's quite hard to remember what order it all happened in. Then he coached me. Then we got married. And then he became my boss.
Yeah, you've survived all that.
Yeah.
We have.
With all that role playing, which must be exhausting.
Yeah. But what I'm going to say now sounds really horrible. I have to say he's completely recovered now, but back into 2020, he had a stroke and had a blood clot in his brainstem. Completely recovered. He's done amazingly well. But now he tastes wine and alcohol very differently.
Yes.
Oh. So now, because I think part of his throat's paralysed. Mm. So certainly with whiskey, he can tell the difference. So before, neither of us, it all just tasted like paint stripper to us. Now he can actually tell the, you know, different flavours.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And he's the same with wine. Wine tastes very different to him now than it used
in
to.
In a good way.
Yes, it's much more focused and he can identify the aromas.
Yeah. Yeah, so if we have a glass of wine, he will now say, oh, can you taste the peaches or can you taste this? And it was like, nope, still can't taste it.
Will, red.
Well, yeah, exactly, red wine.
Yeah, so we're back to the South Island now.
Well, I mean, if you think that New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc was a relatively recent phenomenon in that it's sort of the first plantings were the mid-70s and it didn't really get going until the early 80s. New Zealand Pinot Noir is even younger. I think the first commercial plantings or bottlings was 1987, believe it or not. And what the great thing that New Zealand wine has done, it sort of announced itself on the wine world with Sauvignon Blanc, which, is, as we've discussed, is a very sort of commercial, reliable, great wine, but it's not really going to set the heather alight like the great wines of the world. But now New Zealand is regarded as a country that can produce fine wine, i.e. wines over £20 a bottle, that could compete with some of the best wines in California, in France, in Spain, in Italy, and certainly with Pinot Noir, which home is in France, it's in Burgundy. I think the most expensive wines in the world are made from this great variety, from a village called Von Romane in Burgundy, where there's an estate called Domaine de la Romanée-Conti. And those wines sell for thousands of pounds a bottle. But there are only a small selection of vineyards in the world where you can grow this grape really well. You can grow it well in Sonoma in California. Actually, we do have a few plots in England, but they do it very well in New Zealand. And they do it very well in the South Island, in Central Otago. So that's sort of near, if you fly into Queenstown, that the most beautiful place on earth. But we're going back to Marlborough. We're going back to
Marlborough again. Okay.
We've got a very special wine because it's made by an estate called Grey Wacky, which is named after the stones that you find in New Zealand. And this is the winemaker, the old winemaker from Cloudy Bay, a chap called Kevin Judd, who worked for David Honan. And in 2008, 2009, he set up on his own and he left Cloudy Bay. And he's a great photographer as well. So I think that's a photograph on the label.
Can't wait to try this.
Yeah, and he makes Sauvignon Blanc and he makes Pinot Noir. Now, up in Marlborough, the Pinot Noir, so it's a sort of thin, I don't know if you've ever seen the film Sideways or read the book. It's a very fickle grape vine. It's got very thin skins. And it's what the connoisseurs love. But it has a spectrum of flavours. But in Marlborough, you get this glorious, because I was saying about that sort of diurnal temperature and that lovely intense sunshine, you get this glorious red fruit. Very aromatic.
Oh, good old
yes,
head.
Yes, there we go.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sort of cherries, raspberries and plums. Absolute loads of fruit. And then I think it's defined by its freshness and, again, that lovely acidity.
Oh, yes, that is.
Which means you could pair this with roast chicken, but you could also pair it with salmon. Mm. You know, it's a red wine you could easily serve with fish.
That tastes different from what I was expecting from smelling it.
Not as full-bodied. Yeah, it's light, isn't it?
Mm. But that's really nice. I was smiling when you were saying about how expensive wine can be. So Ian used to work in northern France. A couple of years ago, we decided to go back to where he used to stay. And it's this beautiful chateau, which is incredibly cheap to stay there, but the restaurant is very expensive. So we decided to treat ourselves and go for the tasting menu. Mm. And I started going through and looking at some of the wine and trying not to completely freak out. We're saying, there's bottles of wine in here for £15,000.
Who buys them?
And beyond. And I have to say, they were absolutely fantastic. We had a half bottle, which is what I quite like about France as well.
Not of the 50,000.
Yeah, not of the 50,000.
Not of the 15,000. No.
Oh, God.
No. It probably was the most expensive bottle of wine we'd bought at that
point. There's money in racing.
No, sadly not. But an amazing, lovely place. Yeah. Do you know, out of these three, I like the red.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
Is that your favourite?
I think so.
It has a slightly smoky note as well. Yeah. But what's happened to your father's collection? Still there?
Still there.
And you just sort of draw out as and when.
Well, he's going to be angry.
Yeah.
No, it's a lovely, you know? It's a lovely.
It was very sweet because we didn't know about it. So my mum had passed away years before and he wrote a letter to me and my sister, which was very personal to both of us. And then on the back of it, we got the list. And it was lovely. So sweet. And it was almost like a wish we'd known that when he was alive.
Yeah.
To be able to say thank you. He was very sweet.
Tanya, what does 2024 hold for you? You know, are there any significant debates you're working on, things that have the bit between your teeth?
Yeah, we're still working very heavily in sport. There's a potential for a football regulator and a wider ombudsman for sport to protect young athletes. So duty care is something that I continuously work on. the opportunity to have debates and to actually change legislation is quite varied. But I still work very heavily physical activity. Getting more women to be fit and healthy is important.
Well, I'm sure you must be so inspiring. It's actually snowing outside as well. Become this surreal little thing.
I will never look at this place in the same way again.
Whenever you think of that, you'll think of this very strange little wine tasting in this very noisy little restaurant.
But it's so funny because the noise only started as soon as we started recording.
Oh, Tanny, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's been really lovely.
Well, that's it from us today. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Wine Times in association with the Sunday Times Wine Club. The series producer is Anya Pierce, the producer Callum McRae, and the assistant producer has been Shana Johnson.
You can follow the podcast so you never miss an episode. Just do this via your favourite podcast app.
We'll be back next week with more delicious wines and another great guest.
And remember that all of the wines we tasted today are noted in the episode description. And you can get your hands on all of them from the Sunday Times Wine Club website.
But from all of us here at the Tap and Bottle, thank you very much for listening. We hope to see you next week for more Wine Times.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.